Hey up, and welcome to the Strategy Sessions. My name's Andy Jarvis, and I'm back in the hot seat after Catherine took over last week. The last four episodes have been a Women's History Month miniseries, and I loved every minute of that. So thank you to Alea, Geraldine, Emma, and Catherine for those four fantastic episodes. We're back to the normal episodes and the episode kind of release schedule now. And the next guest is Lydia Infante. Now, Lydia's in SEO, so you might think it's going to be an SEO podcast. It's not. It's a data podcast, or the data of dating, as we call it. What does that mean? Just listen to the story. You can kind of hear and sense. And if you're watching the video, you can see my responses to this. It's a world I know nothing about, and a world Lydia explains beautifully. It's fantastic. Really, really interesting stuff. But as Lydia is an SEO, some of you might be SEOs coming to listen to this. Okay. And if you are, I want to sell you something. Thursday, the 13th of June, I am speaking at London SEO XL. There's a link in the show notes. I'm not going to rattle through all the other speakers, but it's a great lineup. Genuinely a great lineup. It's in London, obviously. The queue's in the name in Shoreditch at the Town Hall. And I'm really looking forward to it. If you want a ticket, details in the show notes. There's even a discount code there. So use the discount code, get some money off, and I'll see you in June on the 13th. That's it. Let's get into listening to Lydia. And if you're old like me, this is going to be really eye-opening for you. I'm going to start with the same question I start with everybody these days. What one thing do you wish you'd have known 10 years ago?
That it doesn't matter how well you're doing your job if you're not being perceived as doing it well. So you need to put as much work in communicating to leadership as you do in knowing that actually your strategy is bang on.
Ooh, wow, okay. Right, let's just unpack that a little.
Mm-hmm.
So, not just, so when you were 10 years ago, you thought, I just do a great job, great things will happen. I do good things, people recognize it, you get promoted. I do good things, people recognize it, you get promoted. And that's the ladder that we're on in work.
Yeah.
But what you've realized is that actually you have to manage upwards and let them know that you're doing a good job as well, not just expect them to find that out.
Yeah, but not just let them know that you're doing a good job, but explain like they're five, basically. Why what you're doing actually aligns with company objectives. And don't expect them to remember it 3 minutes from now. Mm-hmm. Literally every presentation you give, every email you send, every public message, every all staff meeting, clarify why what you're doing is aligned with company objectives. So if you're creating content, I think as SEOs need to do so much work, and I'm not sure that calling myself an SEO is exactly accurate. I feel like I go a little bit beyond that, but we have such a bad reputation for focusing only on search volume, right? Mm-hmm. And traffic, and not on metrics that actually matter to the business. So countering that bad reputation that we start from every single interaction, and have a clear measuring strategy in place, and state over and over and over again why what you're doing actually impacts revenue for the business.
It's one of the best bits of advice I was ever given for my job and my career actually came from someone who's in a very different field. They're a primary school teacher. And it was exactly this advice in a slightly different way, but it was exactly the same advice. I was talking about how sometimes I run training sessions and people go away and every single thing I tell them just lands. And other times I do it and I feel like the whole session is just wasted because people don't quite get what's going on. And I'm like, but it's the same session I ran yesterday where everybody understood it. So is it me? Is it them? And what she said was basically, when you teach primary school children, you have to tell them what you're going to teach them, mm-hmm. teach them it, and then tell them afterwards what you've taught them. Otherwise, it just doesn't land. You know, so you'd say, right, we're going to learn today about the Roman Empire. You then teach them the Roman Empire, and then at the end of the session, you say, we've just done the Roman Empire, and we looked at Julius Caesar, Hadrian's Wall, and these things. And then they go home, and they'll tell their parents, because those three times have landed. If you don't do that, it doesn't stick. So I started to change some of my training sessions, and when I ran a team and I was delivering feedback and things like that, and used that sort of approach over and over again. Tell people what you're going to do, do it, tell them you've done it. And it actually made a big difference to how my training set, like I track NPS of my training sessions, and it now, I think it sits at 88 now, plus 88.
Yeah.
But it went up. I can actually see it going up from when I implemented that change. You know, this one hack will change how you do marketing. The one hack came from a school teacher. And I think it's the same thing as what you're saying, isn't it? Just tell people what you've done, do it, and then tell them again that you've done it.
Yes. And that makes sense in terms of like psychology, because you need a shortcut. You need to label the whole learning and be like, okay, I'll put it in this mental package. I'm going to put this label on it. And when the label comes in, I'm going to retrieve the information. So yeah, that does make a lot of sense.
And if you think about it back in a work context from a school context, your manager or their manager has a lot of things going on, right? You know, you're about to start work as head of international SEO at SurveyMonkey. And yep. I'm assuming that when you get there, that the person you report into will have more than you reporting into them. They might have a team of, you know, if it's a good organization, 6 people maybe. If it's a big, busy organization, they might have 20 direct reports. Plus they're getting work passed down to them from their boss. Plus they've got everything that's going on at home in their life and all the different things. That one thing you dropped in a casual conversation over coffee once that you believe resonated with them,
nope,
didn't even land.
So, yep. They were nodding along while they were thinking, do I need a costume for my child over Christmas?
Yeah. And you know, their phone, you know, they've got an Apple Watch. I don't have one, but they've got an Apple Watch vibrating on the wrist, giving them a notification. They can feel that in their pocket or in their bag going off as well. They're going, I've got this project I need to finish, and here's Lydia rattling on about something that I really don't care. Oh, she stopped talking. Shit. Yeah.
No,
brilliant.
Yeah,
perfect.
That's great.
Yeah, if you think that's the right thing to do, you keep doing that. Mm-hmm. Great. And off you go.
Yeah. So, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. People be people, basically.
Yes. But what's interesting, and because both you and I do a lot of public speaking and communication, the skill set taken to capture and retain attention is a separate skill set from being remembered, right? Mm-hmm. So if I want to capture and retain attention, I'm telling you a story, and it drives you, like it takes you on an emotional journey. But if I want you to remember what I taught you, I need to summarize it at the end of every point. Or I can, and this risks losing the attention at the beginning. I can lay out, this is what we're going to talk about, this is what you're going to learn, and then start the storytelling, and then finish by just packaging it, right? Like I give you a mental frame, then I tell you the thing, then I package it, and I make you care because the story is good.
Yeah, now I accept that entirely. So when I do public speaking, George from Wix laughs at me all the time because every presentation I give has a really simple structure to it, right? I start with a story, which is often not about marketing, often maybe like a historic thing. And then there's a little turn at the end where, you know, you go, why is Andy telling us a story about the history of beer? And then he turns at the end and you're like, oh, I get it, right? And then I go on and tell you some stuff about marketing and usually try and wrap it up with a reference back to the story at the beginning. That's simple. And I do that because the story makes people lean forward. I wrote for JP Castlin's blog, Strategy and Praxis, link in the show notes, I wrote a thing about storytelling, and I started off talking about growing up going to church and how I think pastors and vicars and priests are actually great storytellers. Because if you think of what religion is, here we are at Christmas time, right? You're asking people to believe in something they cannot see and cannot feel. I'm not here to disparage religion. Religion is asking people to take a leap of faith, right?
And yep, quite literally
a leap of faith. And religion has endured and is followed by billions of people across the planet because of the storytelling ability often of the person in front of them to communicate the aspects of that faith. And the one thing they never tell you in church, and I'm pretty sure in any religion, is stats. You never hear anyone who's religious giving a story going, and 73% of the Israelites followed him. Like, no one cares, right? Literally, people remember the stories, they remember the feelings, they don't remember the percentages. They do not. So you rarely get percentages in my presenting. But when I'm doing training, very different, because you have to let people know what they're going to learn, take them through it, the structure's different. Still tell some stories in it, but it's all there. So
I run a training for Brighton SEO, on in-house SEO, and I always use, I keep it updated, the survey for technical SEO, State of Technical SEO by Era Digital and Women in Tech SEO.
Yeah.
And, you know, the survey follows a series of questions, so I like bringing in those stats so that the people coming into the training get a sense of validation of where they are at, or a sense of appreciation of how much better they're doing than other people, and if they're doing worse than the average, like, hey,
or
this
fact
might
that we're
be
all
the
in
problem.
The same shit.
Exactly. So what I do when I'm about to show the stats is I just show the question, and then I ask them, like, well, what's your answer? I go around the room. I do it in a really, really small groups. I really enjoy, like, the personal touch of it. And then I show the stats. And then we discuss the feelings that the stats bring up when compared to our answers. So that's another way of doing that.
It's a beautiful way of hitting that emotional and rational triggers. And when you do hit both of them, in advertising world, that's one of the things they look for. I always talk about hair care products, shampoos and things like that, which is a bit of a laugh because here I am, if you're watching the video, you'll see my baldy head hidden by a MozCon hat, but we'll come back to that in a minute. In fact, side note, I don't feel like I've ever looked more like a podcaster. I feel like some sort of US tech bro with a trucker hat, my earphones in and the microphone in shot. Like, hey, dude, here's some hacks that will change your world.
How I made $1 million with AI.
Yeah, with this one quick change in YouTube. Just buy my course at $89.97. No. Anyway.
I have to say the hat's too colorful for a podcaster bro.
Is it? Sorry. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I'm still learning. I've completely forgotten the point I was going to make. Oh, yeah, shampoo. That's where I was going. If you look at shampoo adverts, they've always got an emotional and a rational cues to them. So they'll have some science. It'll be like, you know, Q10 or scientific blurb will make your hair stronger. But then there's always this emotive bit of somebody wafting their hair around. Now, if you're watching the video, you'll see me trying to waft my imaginary hair around, and Lydia's doing it much better. You know, slow
with
motion
actual hair,
shots.
You know.
With all right, stop showing. No one likes to show off. You know, sort of wafting around, and there's an emotional bit to it as well. And that hitting the emotional and rational trigger is really important for making it land. So what you're doing there with the stats is the same thing. And that stat will land a lot better than just going 73% of in-house SEOs think that this is a problem. Nobody cares. So while we're talking about emotional and rational problems, let's get on to why you're here, right? So here's the thing. When you've run a podcast for a number of years, you start to get pitches from people who want to come on podcasts. And most of them are depressingly similar and dog shit. And they are often, but mostly by a podcast agency or someone who works for a person. It's not that the podcast agencies are shit. It's that it's identical people use them. And it is almost always sort of white guys between the ages of sort of 35 and 45 who are probably paying podcast agencies to get them on shows. And it's always the same pitch. It's like, you know, insert generic name, grew an agency from this to massive figure within so many years. He now helps other agencies do this, or he now sells this, or he's now written a book to help. And it's just like, I just couldn't have any of you on because you're boring as hell. In walks Lydia. Lydia sends me a message, says, can I come on the podcast? I've got something interesting to talk about. I'm like, what is it that's interesting? Because I speak at a lot of SEO events and I don't like covering SEO too much on this podcast because it's not an SEO podcast and everyone's fed up of hearing me say that. But so I'm like, no, I just really want to talk about SEO. So what is it you want to talk about? And you were like, well. And not many things make me stop and go, oh, wow, okay, let's do it. So with that introduction, let's unpack this a little, because it's a world I genuinely know nothing about, but I've since started reading a few things about. So I'm old and I grew up before these things were invented and have never used them. And I'm married as well, so never have any plans to use them. What are we talking about?
We're talking about dating. We're talking about dating apps and acting like a complete crazy person with data and dating apps because, and I'm going to like go against our advice before, but like, scientifically speaking, your choice of partner as a woman is the most impactful choice you're ever going to make in your financial well-being and your happiness, okay? And it's Christmas right now, right? Like we're recording this episode on Christmas, and I want to remind everybody that the magic of Christmas is your mom. When the people who know what you want for Christmas, the gifts, the decoration, the food, the stuff that makes it all magical and exciting is the care that women and the empathy that women put into the family. Now, this is not always true, and I hope it's going to become less and less true as the years go by. I hope this statement ages terribly. And if you are still listening to this podcast, in 2 years, you think to yourself, what's she going on about? That's ridiculous. But the truth of the matter right now is that your choice of partner is the biggest impact in your life. And statistically speaking, women are more unhappy in a relationship than they are single. Women who are single live longer. It is the opposite for men. Men are happier in relationships. Men live longer in relationships. Men make more money when they're in relationships. Men do less housework when they're in relationships. The opposite for women, okay? So you could say that... So
question number one is, why do you want to be in a relationship?
You live longer, be happy. You know, why do women want to be in relationships? Well, we've been told to aspire to wife, mother, all of our lives, right? From a patriarchal.
Just at this point, can you hold your mug up again, please? Just for anyone who's watching the video. It's a Taylor's version mug.
Taylor's version.
Fuck the patriarchy. It feels like it's very on brand for the rest of this conversation.
Exactly. All right. So I go, not me, right? I'm not going to be the one that lives less, is more unhappy, and does more housework hours. So how am I, with my patriarchal aspiration of wife and mother, going to turn it all around? Well, I have this annoying thing where I think I'm really smart. So I decided to use marketing and science to choose the best possible partner. And I developed... Go ahead. Ask me the question, because it is a niche.
I can't decide if I think this is genius or the most terrifying thing I've ever heard, that you've applied your marketing and data love work to finding a partner, not work. You've put these two things together. And I also wonder what would have happened if your job would have been, say, I don't know, maybe a painter. Would you have still done the same thing? Would you just painted different pictures to attract a partner?
I was always going to be a marketer, I think. I was born like this. Okay, so dating and business have so many parallels. You can think of your dating profile or your dating persona as a product, and the places in which you're trying to find partners, they're going to be your distribution channels, right? Then you need to think about the positioning of this product, and you could potentially think about the price of this product, which is not price, unless you're in a very different business than me. But, well, there's a cost to taking you out, not just like, this will all make sense. There's a time cost, isn't there?
I know some friends who've been on the apps, they don't even call them dating apps, just say on the apps, talk about the level of time that they have to spend doing the admin that's connected with it.
Yes.
And then, like I say, meeting people, going out on dates, that's a time commitment, it's a cost commitment, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, there's a cost.
Yeah. So What inspired this whole crazy that I'm going to unravel in your podcast, sorry, Andy, was that Tinder released a feature where they would A/B test or multivariate test, technically, all of your pictures to figure out which picture to put on first to get you the most likes. Now, on Tinder, I had like a picture of me in front of the Marina Bay Sands in Singapore. Beautiful thing. A picture of me with my cat, a picture of me in a bikini in the Amalfi Coast. Do you want to take a guess which one got the most likes?
It's got to be the bikini one, right?
It was the bikini one. So the bikini one went first. I let Tinder take the reins, and the bikini picture went first, and I got so many likes and matches, and every single one of them was trash. They would open up with like, DTF, you up? Aubergine emoji, that kind of vibe, you know, like it
Okay.
was so.
Now, can we just pause here for a second? So there are, I know from the stats on Spotify that there are some people of a different generation listening to this podcast,
Right.
including people like me in the 40s who, as I said, never been on the apps, and it's a world I have to get my head around a little. So just rolling back, firstly, when I was a lad, if you wanted to meet someone, you had to go, you met them at work, or you'd meet them in the pub, or you'd meet them in nightclubs, and this whole kind of, there's a product price place and promotion element to it. It's just, maybe it was always like that. Maybe you bought them a drink, that was the price. Maybe the product was what you were wearing, or the aftershave you had on, and maybe the dancing that you did was the promotion element. Maybe we just never looked at it in these terms before.
It was always like this, but now that it's online, we can measure it.
Right, so we could measure it, okay. And the second thing, you're going to have to explain in terms that old people might understand. I'm pretty sure everybody knows what a man means if he sends an aubergine or an eggplant to our American listeners, emoji to a lady on a dating app. I think we can all work that out. But the process of using an app, just very briefly, is you put a profile up, then what happens? Just give us a very like 30, 60 second what the apps do, basically. Give us that rundown.
So the two main ones, Bumble and Tinder, you upload your profile on, you put a bio on there. I wonder if anybody reads it. The data says no. We'll get back to that. And people swipe left or right to say whether or not they like you. Now, if they swipe left on, sorry, if they swipe right on you, if they like you, and you express that you like them too, that becomes a match, and you've got the option to initiate a conversation.
Right, gotcha. So you put the bikini. You let Tinder put the bikini picture first. You get a lot more matches, and then you can start a conversation, a messaging conversation, and they're moving straight from we've matched to do you want to go to bed with me? Basically.
Yes, exactly. And that's a thing that happens online a lot more than it would happen in person, because when you're meeting somebody through work, through friends, or in real life, there is a social, there's a, an amount of accountability from your social
There's a
circle
social
that you
contract. You
don't,
can't just walk
yes.
up to a woman in a bar and say, "Hey, can we just leave and go to bed now?" You'd be like, "What? You weirdo, slap,
Yes.
all perfectly well deserved." But digitally, remotely, you just get blocked.
Yeah. Or you play the numbers and maybe there's another like very horny person who's gonna say yes. You know? I don't know of anybody who's ever replied yes to DTF, like a cold DTF on a dating app. But you know, like they're doing it. It
I'm
must
sure it's a
work.
thing. I'm sure it's a thing.
I'm sure if you play the numbers long enough, you know, right? But I don't play the numbers. I'd rather play the quality, and I have two ways of optimizing my dating life. I can reduce the amount of investment that I put on it, so streamline the time that I put on it, and improve the leads that are coming in. So invest a little bit in improving my profile to attract the right personas, right? Like
So
my
you are
target audience.
optimizing your funnel effectively.
Literally, at the time that I was like heavily dating, and I was working for this SaaS company, and it was a very interesting product. It was
A SaaS
SMS
company
for
or a
business.
sassy company?
It was a very boring SaaS. It was
Right, okay, sorry.
extremely, you know, like I really love SaaS because of the measurement opportunity, but this specific one was business messaging. So WhatsApp API and SMS and all of that, right? And the interesting thing is this can be used for an enterprise use case, or a lot of people that were coming into our funnel were spam customers that were looking to do A2P, so application to person messaging for scam purposes. So we were measuring as part of our sales pipeline. We had a very clear approach based on Salesforce, sales pipeline optimization approach, and we were using Salesforce. So we would have MQLs that would come through our digital efforts, right? Just plain leads that could be qualified with like marketing scoring and all of that stuff. And then those would be passed on to sales, who would decide whether or not this lead was qualified. And then once it was passed on as qualified, the size of the opportunity would be assessed. And you would have bronze, like a very important customer, silver, that's nice, and you would have gold. So I decided to apply this funnel optimization process to my dating life. A lead would be a match. So when I get a match, like, I count a lead, and I put that on a spreadsheet, okay?
you used the spreadsheet for you.
Of course, and I automated the spreadsheet. It made graphs. It was fantastic. I will find a screenshot of it if you want to share it as part of the show, but...
We'll use it as part of the promo, if you don't mind.
Yes, so I tested a bunch of things, and I feel like this is going to teach us a lot about human nature and about me. A lot more than you want to know, Andy.
More about Lydia first, and then human nature second. Carry on.
Yes, all right. So we've got leads, okay? The leads go into a spreadsheet as a count, right? Daily leads, this many. And then we've got qualified leads. So on the first conversation, I'm like, do I want to go on a date with you or not?
From one conversation?
Well, how much time do you think I have? And how much matches do you think I have?
I don't know. Can you give us a sense of numbers? How many leads are we talking? Are we talking about like hundreds? Are we talking about dozens?
Are we talking about single figures? 20 per day.
Oh, 20 per day?
Yeah. Man, I used to be very hot in 2019. Anybody watching this video right now, you would not believe it. I was. Yes.
Listen, I am not here, nor am I qualified to comment on your hotness. I'm going to say is, listen, but 20 a day.
Yeah.
Is this the reality of using dating apps? You're getting...
As a woman,
In a big city. I'm assuming like if you live out in the sticks, maybe you don't get this, but in a big city in England, 20 a day in terms of matches.
Yeah.
Shit.
And I was selective. And I had a profile that would put people off. That would put the wrong audience.
What did he say? I use a spreadsheet to measure you.
I know. No. Oh my god. We can get into it now. Like you're worried. What the fuck is the scale, right? Yeah. 20 conversations a day. 20 new people to talk to every day. On Bumble, which was my preferred option, the woman has to open the conversation. So I had to think of a witty, funny, cute thing to say to every single of these 20 people. Absolutely not. I went on, created a list of about 20 to 30 prompts of like first things that I could say, and then I scored them in two dimensions. So how intimate they are, like how much of an intimacy threat I'm going to be throwing to you, and how much effort to respond there is to it. So if you imagine this, it goes into a matrix of like a little square, and we've got...
2x2, yeah. Classic strategy consultants, 2x2. We love a 2x2, yeah.
Yep. So we've got high intimacy, low effort. Way to make a girl swoon. Which is, by the way, what I told my husband on the first message that I sent him on the app. And this is the type of prompt that would bring me the most qualified leads. Then we've had the low effort, low intimacy. So like, would you rather have waffles or pancakes for breakfast? And I would like the answers would skyrocket, but that would not really like improve my sales pipeline any way, shape or form. Then low intimacy, high effort. What is your favorite James Bond? very, like, not a lot of
Skyfall.
answers. Well, I meant, like, what is your favorite James Bond actor? So would that be Daniel Craig for you? Because I am of the, like, what's his face? The one before Daniel Craig.
Pierce Brosnan.
I am from the Pierce Brosnan era, so I really like Daniel Craig, but I used to be
Pierce,
a.
so this is the third podcast I've recorded in a row where we've got into movie reviews, right? And I got a lot of stick for saying Con Air is one of my favorite films, but I stand by it. I said what I said. I don't think Pierce Brosnan was as bad as everybody says he was. He was very much of his time. But if you remember where James Bond was before Pierce Brosnan took over, they were talking about killing it because it had just lost its way a little bit. Timothy Dalton wasn't great, and there was all sorts, and it took a bit of a gap. He came back and he just made it fun. He was just a very fun, very probably 10 years too late, but he brought a, he was a very 80s Bond in the 90s, but he
Yeah.
was fun with it, and he was great, and he was fun. But Daniel Craig, kind of, I think he's just like a lot of people will look at the next Bond and be like, ah,
Yep.
it's just not the
I
same.
agree. That like I was a little bit disappointed when it went from Pierce Brosnan to Daniel Craig. But anyway, high effort, low intimacy, nobody would reply to that, okay? And then high intimacy, high effort would actually reduce my MQLs. So something for like, what's the last time you laughed out loud? Nobody wants to think about
10
that.
seconds ago.
Yes.
Yep.
So my the prompts that work best for my pipeline was high intimacy, low effort. So a way to make a girl swoon. You've got a smile that's like gorgeous, or I bet you hear this all the time, but you've got beautiful eyes. That kind of shit. They ate it up. My SQLs went
Oh,
up.
do you know what? You've nailed human psychology. Like, you're saying these things to me, and I'm like, oh, thanks, Lydia. I mean, no, I have got the humor. You're not even telling that to me, but I'm sat here going, oh, thanks.
Yeah, so that's how I manage such a large number of leads, right? By having some marketing automation to it and A/B testing, multivariate testing, actually, the responses, like my messaging.
I genuinely think anyone over the no no anyone who's never been on a dating app like me, like he's probably sat here, so older people are probably sat there going, is this how life works these days? I can imagine my mum listening to this, not that she ever listens to the podcast, but listening going, what happened to going to a dance? But it's th this is this just doesn't seem real to me, but this is real. This is this actually happened. This is what you did.
I mean, the market's gigantic, so you have to like sort yourself out, and the stakes are fucking high. You know, like this is my years of life, my earning potential,
Happiness, your
my
earning potential. Yeah,
happiness.
this is everything.
So, yeah, so I'm investing in this. So, okay, so we've got the leads. They become qualified during the first conversation, right? They become an MQL. And then we go on a date. And in the if the date goes well, they become an SQL, a sales qualified lead. And if it doesn't, they become unqualified. Bye bye. We don't care. An SQL is a good date. And during an SQL, like a sales assessment, opportunity assessment call, I decide whether they're bronze, here for a good time, not a long time, whether they're silver, like, okay, we can renew the contract a few times, maybe, or if they're gold, which is husband potential. And then after each of these
I've got a
opportunities,
question. Sorry.
yes.
Is there a category below bronze where you just went and you're just like, absolutely fucking not? There
Yeah,
must have been like
unqualified.
a fourth category. But did you ever get anyone who came through MQL stage, you went on a date with them and went, oh, actually, I probably shouldn't have done that, and just
Yeah.
never contacting them again?
Yes, absolutely.
What was that category?
A million times. So one time there was this guy who. He was a PPC manager, okay? So that should have been the first red flag.
Red flag, red flag.
Red flag. He was like Scandinavian or something, and he looked kind of hot. And the banter was there. He was very funny. So we went on a date. And when I showed up to the date, there was no banter. He was not funny. He was a little uglier than his pics, but I didn't mind that much. Like I'm sure I'm uglier than my pictures. Well, I know that for a fact because my husband has told me. And yeah, so this man, he was so weird that I'm convinced someone else was having this conversation on our behalf. The date was going very poorly. I could not shake him off me. No matter what, like, little strategies I was using, oh, I'm so tired. He's like, oh, I'm thinking of bed already. And I'm like, no, I want to exit. So I had this safe place that I would take all of my dates to. It's a wine bar in Barcelona, amazing place. And we'd have a glass of wine. And there was a back exit, you know? And because I would take all of my dates there, the owners and bartenders and everybody knew me there. So this guy, he was so creepy that I stepped away from my drink to go to the bathroom. And then when I came back, I thought, I cannot trust myself to finish the drink because I don't know if he's put something on it. Therefore, I'm going to exit this date immediately. No niceness needed because I can absolutely fucking not like deal with this. So I went to the bartender and I said, hey, what was his name? Daniel, I think. I was like, hey, Danny, this guy, he's creeping me out. Can I exit through the staff door? I'll pay for our drinks now. And he's like, you don't pay for anything. This man pays for it. Leave out the back and I'll text you like to make sure that he's still here while you're going to your car. So we did that. And that's like the most extreme case because he could not take a hint. Like he caressed my knee and I was like, whoop, whoop. Gross. So like there were no signs coming from me that this was going well. Yeah.
Just tell me, as a dad of a teenage girl, when you go on a date, do you have a friend who you check in with and you're like, right, I'm going on a date to this place with this guy at this time and I'll check in with you by 10 p.m. And if I haven't, you need to call, you know. Do you have that sort of fallback in place?
Not really. I wish I did. I trusted my own ability to stay safe way too much because experience showed that I was not that safe all the time. Sorry to tell you, but it's brutal out there for women.
This is blowing my mind, this genuinely. So it's terrifying.
It is terrifying. And, you know, sexual violence is so rampant. You would not believe. I'm reading a book right now by Caitlin Moran called What About the Men? And the book is going on about... We're in an extreme tangent right now, but the book covers why are men afraid of false rape allegations, the statistics behind false rape allegations, and the statistics behind actual like rape. And about 97% of all rape accusations are real. Rape reports to the police. They're well, not real, not like you've been sentenced. Because sentencing in the UK
not made up. Yeah,
it's not good. But you can prosecute if you believe somebody is falsely reporting you. And only like 2% of all rape reports to the police turn out to be false reports, like judge certified false reports. But then only about 30% get reported at all. And the odds of a woman who is a victim of rape knowing their rapist are about 80 to 90%. So it's not a guy that's hiding in the bushes that jumps out at you. It's somebody that's like crossing boundaries and using your trust and the social contract that we mentioned earlier to actually, you know, abuse you. There was a survey that many young men fear being some woman's horror story without knowing that they're actually some woman's horror story. So I guess the only thing we can do for good men who are actually scared about that is to maintain ongoing communication on consent throughout your relationships. But yeah, it is. It's a fucked up world out there.
It is. And depressingly so as well. And I didn't think we'd get here when we started talking about, but
I know, I think, right?
It's a live part of going out on, as you're talking about, going out on lots of dates with people who, let's be honest, you barely know. You've not even had, I just assumed that you didn't go out on a date with someone until you've spent like 3 weeks messaging them and thought, okay, this guy seems kind of fun. This is literally like someone, it's very low intent. Swiped on a picture, little bit of banter from a couple of predetermined messages, bang, you're in a bar with someone.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was this quick. So this is, and again, the younger listeners are probably thinking, all right, granddad, you know, yeah. This is not how this works. But, you know, this moves much quicker than I thought it did.
Yeah, that's why I needed to address it with a framework. All right, so now that the bummer is, like, out of the way, I would then, like, evaluate the opportunities as close won or close lost. Because sometimes I would think somebody was bronze and they would think I was spam, okay? It wasn't that usual, but it happened. Mm-hmm. But then I started thinking, I made a gold opportunity my North Star, right? Like, I was like, nah, it's has 1 o'clock. Like, we need to find somebody that's nice and good and amazing. And I want to be very in love and also have a long life and a happy life and make lots of money. So it's 1 o'clock. I was optimizing for gold opportunities. While in the past, I had been optimizing for silver or bronze. So I realized something. There were people that were playing the game as well as me, you know? They had optimized profiles. They were looking sexy. They had the right answers to all of my questions. They were, like, so smooth on the date. And then they would never, like, call me back. So I thought, this is a red ocean audience. Like, this is a red ocean market. A red ocean market for the uninitiated in crazy applications of business principles to life is a market that where you're competing for the same set of customers with a very large pool of, like, competitors. So a lot of women were going.
I'll link to the red and blue ocean strategies thing in the show notes, so you can read. You might need to read it with maybe like 3 glasses of whiskey in to make the
I
link.
I swear,
this is
an MBA kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yes, it is an MBA kind of thing. So I observed that this was a red ocean market. So I decided, how do I make this a blue ocean market? Do I change my targeting? Do I change my my product or my positioning or my distribution channels? And I thought, I'm going to change my targeting. And I'm going to look at these men who are not taking good pictures, but are actually very good looking if you take a second look. And they might be having a lot less matches than me. And so that's how I started targeting nerds. And I was like,
okay.
So you've
married a really handsome man who's a shit photographer. That's what you've
done. Honestly, my husband's hot as fuck. I keep getting pictures with, like, Google Photos, memory of whatever. I'm like, how did I ever get that man? He was like a scrawny nerd when we first met. He's a software developer. So when I read software developer, I was like, yes, you are going into the sales pipeline. And yet now he's like freaking jacked because he goes to the gym 5 times a week and makes like a lot more money than when I met him. Which, talk about investing, you know, Warren Buffett's got nothing on me. Anyway, blue ocean strategy. Blue ocean strategy is when you start targeting customers in a space where they're not being targeted by your competitors. So I start looking at these nerds who are beautiful, but don't know it, and who are smart and funny and possibly kind, will figure it out on the date. So I match with my husband, marked him as a gold opportunity on the first date. He was incredible. And then I married him.
Given that everything moves quicker than I think, you're not going to tell me you married him within like 2 months of the first date, are you?
No, but it was kind of like pretty fast. Okay.
Okay.
You know, I had explored the market. I knew most of what was out there. I had a lot of information about what I liked and what I didn't like. And when I met him, I was like, holy shit, he's exactly what I want. He was kind. He had lived abroad in India, and like, he was mega smart. I'm very in love with my husband. I don't know if that's coming across. But yeah, I actually went
it
on.
It feels like the decision-making matrix that being in love with him was about number 6 or 7. But then again, look, people keep saying millennials will only buy things because of purpose, and that's only ever about 6 or 7 on the decision-making tree. So maybe it's not that much of a problem.
So I went on 2 more dates after meeting him, And I was so extremely bored on those dates compared to like being with him that I just shut the whole thing down. I was like, this is my golden opportunity. I deleted the spreadsheet. I then went back for it because, for the lols, it's a really good story. But yeah, I knew within like 3 dates.
So you knew within 3 dates, but what was the time lapse between then and, and look, you're a modern woman. Did you propose to him? Give us the end of the love story. So you
Oh.
went on 3 dates and then what?
We went on 3 dates, and then on date 4, I was like, hey, I've been going on dates with other people, and I don't want to go on dates with other people anymore. And he's like, so I got you all for me? And I was like, yeah. He's like, oh my God, do you want to be my girlfriend? And I was like, yeah. So date 4, we were official. He met my parents about a month later. My parents made an absolute show of themselves. They showed up a little tipsy because they were coming from a wedding. It was actually quite funny, and nobody, like, they did not speak the same language. Then I moved to Sheffield for work to like go on to work for Rise at 7, and I was like, do you want to move to Sheffield with me? This was 4 months into knowing each other. He's like, are you crazy? Are you actually like insane? I'm not moving to UK with someone I've known for 4 months. And I was like, yeah, fair enough. Well, do you want to move in for a month and help me out with like settling into the UK? So he did. We really enjoyed this practice living together run. He moved back to Spain, where he lived at the time, and we thought we were going to be able to do like a long distance thing where we would visit each other every 2 weeks or so. And the pandemic, the second wave hit. So we weren't able to see each other for 2 months. We realized that we just wanted to be together. So he moved in with me in June that year. So about a year after we had met, we moved in together. And a year later, less than a year later, we were engaged. And about 2 years and a half into our relationship, we were married.
Second Taylor Swift reference of the day. It's a love story, baby, just
Baby, just
say.
say yes.
There we go.
Yeah,
Well,
totally.
I mean, I'm just going to move on quickly, right? Just very quickly. If you take this approach to your dating life, right? What are you like at work? You must fucking love a spreadsheet, right?
I love a
You must like wake
spreadsheet.
up in a morning dreaming of, are you Excel or are you Google Sheets?
Google Sheets.
Google
I'm a
Sheets. You must
Google
wake up
Sheets
in a
girl.
morning dreaming of Google Sheets. But, oh, I get to play with Google Sheets again today and all of the data.
I am more of a CRM lady. I'm like, ooh, what is the sales pipeline looking like? We bring in more revenue. Size matters when it comes to revenue. So, yeah.
Listen, right. Anyone who knows me knows I love a Willy joke, but I tend not to make them on the podcast. This is
Hey,
my
you're the
episode
one who brought
60.
up Willys. I've been talking about pipeline. There were so many puns to be made.
This is like episode 60 something or other of the show, and yeah, probably the first Willy joke ever. But look, I'm
You're
here for it.
welcome.
I am here for it. Might even bring you back, and Lydia does Willy jokes every month or something like that. Listen, we're running out of time. We're genuinely running out of time. I usually at this stage ask people for a book recommendation, something that kind of influenced their thinking. I'm now not sure whether it should be, is this going to be Romeo and Juliet or is it going to be some sort of data science book? I'm not sure. Or maybe you could write like
I'm
the data
definitely
science
writing
of.
this into a book.
Oh, of course you should be writing it into a book.
I've started
Yes.
writing the Tinder MBA with all of the principles and parallels between dating and business. Because we were
Incredible.
talking earlier that the best way to learn is to feel something.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of dating business principles to be learned from the dating world, and the dating world is a lot more interesting than the business world. So
So is
learn
the
with me.
Tinder MBA going to be a dating book that uses business principles to score a match, or a business book that explains business through the lens of dating apps?
It's a business book.
Business book. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, one of the reasons I started this podcast, I work on my own most of the time, and I love learning. I've got a postgrad and the Marketing Week mini MBA, and I'll keep going on. But when you're not in a team, you lose those learning opportunities from other people. So one of the reasons I started this podcast up was to learn new stuff and to tap the brains of really smart people. I never thought it would take me down here to learning like dating apps and weirdos with spreadsheets about who have a spreadsheet and MQL and SQL approach to their love life. But look, I mean, it worked for you. And who am I to be a critic if it works, right?
It did. But talking about book recommendations, there is one that I would make that really changed my career. That would be Never Split the Difference, which is a negotiating book. Okay. If you are freelancing or like in any level of consultancy, or even when you're doing in-house work, managing upwards, this book really helps.
Interesting. Again, as I've said a dozen times today, link in the show notes. The show notes are going to be wild in this one, I think. You know, links to Tinder, Bumble, Red and Blue Ocean strategies, strategy and practice.
A bikini picture just to prove that I was hot in 2019.
I'm not comfortable as a 43-year-old man, but I'll be 44 when this comes out, about putting bikini pics of someone in my podcast. Like, even though it's part of the thing, I think not everyone would listen, because my funnel is people see it and not listen to it before they move through that.
Oh,
and
wow.
People would just go, who is this prick and why is he
doing
that?
They would be
that?
Like, what's so up?
Yeah. We'll put your LinkedIn details, and what do you, are you just LinkedIn? Have you given up on Twitter yet? Or
no, not yet. So you can find me on Twitter at Lydia Infante M. And sometimes I still tweet stuff.
Right. Well, we'll put your details for Twitter and LinkedIn in the show notes. And no, actually, don't get in touch with Lydia and ask for the bikini pic, because that would just be even more weird. But, you know, just get in touch
with
Lydia.
Let's move on from the bikini pic.
Spreadsheet. I don't know. I feel like I've gone from very solid ground of learning onto this is just getting a little bit weird. So let's, Lydia, thank you very much for your time. You should, by the time people are listening to this, have started your new role as head of international SEO for SurveyMonkey. Congratulations. I hope
you
crush it. I'm dressed like a podcaster, so yeah, crush it, man. I hope it goes well for you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for coming on. Cheers, Lydia. Bye.
Bye.